and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
In DRC, people are divided. Some people welcome this joint operation and think that it's a good idea as our army is fighting with Ugandan army against the rebel ADF, who was involved in many crimes.
The Ugandan People's Defense Force, or UPDF, says the joint military offensive against rebels from the Allied Democratic Forces, or ADF, is steadily progressing.
The key decisions that we took essentially include, number one, the importance, or the imperatives rather, of reducing the number of political appointees in the ECOWAS Commission and to make it more serious.
Regional civil society groups and NGOs call for an immediate restructuring of the Economic Community of West African States Commission.
So what we are doing is that we are using the occasion to award industry giants, people who have contributed outstandingly to, especially after COVID, building the economies of both continents.
And the Asian African Leadership Forum and Awards event begins this week in the Ghanaian capital, Accra. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, the Ugandan People's Defense Force, or UPDF, says the joint military offensive against rebels from the Allied Democratic Forces, or ADF, is steadily progressing. This after the UPDF claimed thousands of ADF casualties. The announcement comes after Amnesty International called on both the UPDF and the Congolese army to ensure the protection of civilians and to respect international humanitarian law. The UPDF says its core objective is to defeat and dismantle the ADF rebels. For the latest on the joint military offensive against the militant, I reach Jafar Al-Kantanti in Goma.
According to a statement from the Ugandan Defense Ministry, more than 1,000 ADF have been killed during this operation. The FRDC, the Congolese Army, didn't give any real number, but say also about 1,000 ADF injured and a lot of them captured during this joint operation.
How are the people of Congo reacting to this ongoing joint military operation against the ADF rebels that the Ugandan army calls terrorists?
In DRC, people are divided. Some people welcomed this joint operation and think that it's a good idea as our army is fighting with Ugandan army against the rebel ADF, who was involved in many crimes, killing people and burning cars, destroying houses and villages. But another group of people say that it's not a good idea as Ugandan troop has a rough path in DRC. As you know, for 6 days, Ugandan troops fighted against Rwandan troops in Kisangani, killing many people and destroyed the city. So some people think that this can be, again, what Ugandan soldiers will do after this operation. And some people are afraid they are not believe and trust in the success of this operation. And our political class is also divided. As you know, before this operation, there is a semester, the president of DRC proclaimed the state of siege. And with the state of siege, all politicians, governors, and MPs in North Kivu and Ituri left their job. And they are the ones who are welcoming this joint operation because for them, it has taken so long, the state of siege, because the state of siege didn't change anything. ADF was killing people in the state of siege as before state of siege. So this operation, as it's going very well for them, it's a good idea to make end of the presence of ADF in the region so that MPs and even the civilian governor will recover their job.
The UN mission to Congo, or MONUSCO, is still operating in the DRC. So what are they doing now with this ongoing joint military offensive against the ADF rebels by the Ugandan army, the UPDF, and the FARDC, or the Congolese army?
MONUSCO is not involved in this ongoing operation and said we'll never give any support to FARDC or to Ugandan army because it was not implicated in the planification of this operation. But they still present in the region doing their ongoing mission to protect people and more to protect civilians in the region.
How are Congolese reacting to this statement, especially when people often say that MONUSCO troops stand by when rebels, including FARDC militants, attack unarmed civilians, destroy their property, and steal from them?
In all the eastern DRC, people don't care about MONUSCO again. For a long time, MONUSCO is not welcomed in the eastern DRC, especially in Beni and Ituri, in Beni region and Ituri province, because of the insecurity. So for the people, it's nothing. If they don't support this operation, it's even good for them because they do nothing since long time. People have been killed in hundreds of meters from MONUSCO, and MONUSCO didn't do anything. So for them, they can. For the locals, MONUSCO can participate or not. It will never change anything.
Jafar Al-Kantanti is a Goma-based journalist. He spoke with me from Goma in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Meanwhile, the UN Refugee Agency has expressed outrage at the sharp rise in deadly attacks by armed groups in the Democratic Republic of Congo's Ituri and South Kivu provinces. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
Dozens of people have been killed and scores wounded in the last month in the series of raids on sites harboring displaced people. The latest incident took place Sunday at Njala, a site for displaced people in the Drodro health zone in Ituri province. Local authorities say 10 women and 9 children were killed and 11 people wounded. They say men used guns, machetes, and knives during their killing spree. A spokesman for the UN Refugee Agency, Boris Cheshakov, says the attack was preceded by a series of grisly assaults against unarmed civilians who were displaced by previous atrocities.
And what we have seen just in the span of several weeks is an increase in the number and frequency of attacks. And these are brutal attacks. At the end of these attacks, we have the bodies of women, of children, of families, and whole communities are torn apart.
About 120 armed groups reportedly operate in eastern DRC. Media reports put the blame for the recent attacks on fighters from the Cooperative for the Development of the Congo, known as CODECO. The group is composed mainly of people from the Lendu farming community. Decades of intercommunal ethnic conflicts between Lendu agriculturalists and Hema pastoralists have resulted in tens of thousands of deaths. Cheshirkov says the recent clashes have uprooted thousands of people living in locations that are housing displaced people. For example, he notes a deadly attack on November 21st in villages in Drodro and Che forced some 20,000 inhabitants to flee for safety to Ro, a site near a UN military base.
The site doubled in size from 21,000 to 40,500 people in just 48 hours, forcing the newly arrived families to sleep in the open. The main needs are food, shelter, and healthcare, as well as psychosocial assistance.
The UNHCR is calling on all parties to stop the attacks on displaced communities and to treat those facilities as sanctuaries for people who are forced to flee their homes. The agency is appealing for greater financial support, adding it has received only 52% of the $205 million needed for its life-saving operation in the DRC. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Regional civil society groups and NGOs are calling for an immediate restructuring of the Economic Community of West African States Commission in order to effectively address challenges facing member states. At a recent three-day workshop in the Senegalese capital, Dakar, the groups called for ECOWAS to reduce its governance and institutional structure to 6 commissioners from what they say is the current but costly format with 15 commissioners. They also urged an end to the practice of African leaders rushing to attend meetings in the capitals of wealthy Western countries, which some say reminds them of colonialism. The calls come as regional leaders plan to meet soon to review a report on institutional reform, which has reportedly recommended a slimmer structure with 7 commissioners. Dr. Ken Ukawa, president of the National Association of Nigerian Traders, or NANT, spoke on behalf of the groups. He expressed concern about what he called the unprecedented deterioration of the security situation and persistent threats to countries in the region. He tells me that a serious and effective regional bloc should be able to provide solutions to the problems confronting West Africa.
We tried to review some of the issues like insecurity in the sub-region, which has currently taken over a huge part of the region. Look at Nigeria, to the Sahel region, where you have Mali, Niger Republic, and then Burkina Faso, almost overrun by insurgents. And we felt that we're not seeing actions from the member states. We're not seeing actions from the heads of states. We're not seeing serious actions in rooting out these guys and bringing calmness and we cannot allow the entire space to be derailed this way and the space taken off entirely. And then coupled with the fact that we also have the COVID and its devastating implications on the region. So we felt we needed to speak at this time. And we came for 3 days and had a review of the entire situation. That's why we took the decision.
What were the key changes that the group or participants of this three-day workshop want to see at ECOWAS? What are the changes?
The key decisions that we took essentially include, number one, the importance or the imperatives, rather, of reducing the number of political appointees in the ECOWAS Commission and to make it more serious. And in making it serious, as to look at integration issues and bring us together, we also looked at the kind of budget, the kind of expenditure, funding that goes into administrative issues that are not development-oriented. And so we felt, just like the African Union, we don't need a bogus kind of administrative house. We don't need all of these 15 commissioners, each member state having a commissioner represented. And then the entire money are also swallowed up again.
Do the participants think that ECOWAS, as it's constituted right now, that is not serious?
Our conclusion is that the structure is wieldy, bogus, and therefore cannot be taken seriously as it's constituted. And therefore, we need a lean structure that is, direct to the point, a lean structure that also reduces funding, expenditure, so that we can have a prudent economic management from the region, from the commission, that can also save some money for development projects for the citizens. Community citizens do not see projects that are development-oriented. For instance, it is difficult for you to see a rail line moving from one country to another. It's difficult. You don't find a regional airline. Such regional infrastructure, they are missing. Why? Because there is no fund. and the major chunk of the funds are going to, you know, involvement, heading towards administrative purposes. So we felt that that is not the essence of integration. We need to really touch the lives of the citizens. There is food insecurity. Therefore, funds should lead to ensuring that there is food supply.
So, Doc, basically, members think that ECOWAS cannot address pressing challenges that residents in the West African sub-region experience, including insecurity, movement of people, among other issues?
Yes, absolutely. In all our reviews, we discovered that it is not like, you know, look, for instance, the head of state would need to be more concise, and they also need to move out of, you know, the authority of head of state becoming like a tea party. We are the only sanction actions coming from their colleagues. So we felt that there should be some sanity among the head of state, and essentially also that the appointed commissioners should be reduced, that so that we can save funds. They should be reduced so that they can meet their target. They should be reduced so that we can also look at development. They should be reduced so that we can also look at integration.
Dr. Ken Ukawa is president of the National Association of Nigerian Traders, or NANT. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. The Asian African Leadership Forum and Awards event is scheduled to be held on December 10 in the Ghanaian capital, Accra. Officials say the meeting, organized by the Asian African Chamber of Commerce and Industry, will honor business leaders who have made a significant impact on their industry and on society. It also offers the opportunity for participants to network and interact. Over 200 participants have registered to be part of the ceremony. Senior Ghanaian officials and Asian government officers are scheduled to attend. For details and prospects of business opportunities at the upcoming forum, I reach Mark Gideon Dakun, the Asian African Chamber of Commerce and Industries country president in Ghana.
The Asian African Chamber of Commerce has been established as a trade chamber that facilitates business between the African and the Asian continent. So basically, this is a chamber of commerce that has been set up to bring businesses in Africa and businesses in Asia together to interact and to do business. So on the 10th of December this year, we are having the flagship event that has been dubbed the Asian African Leadership Forum that is taking place here in Accra at Marriott Hotel.
How significant is this program and how beneficial do you think it will be for the relationship between Asia and Africa?
Great. So it is twofold. It is an awards night and it's a forum as well. So what we are doing is that we are using the occasion to award industry giants, people who have contributed outstandingly to, especially after COVID, building the economies of both continents. And you know, the Asian continent, African continent, are huge continents that have a lot of impact on the world economy. So this occasion is really going to expose such people and the businesses they are into, and then be able to use it to also elevate them further. And secondly, it's a forum, and we expect to receive all kinds of people who play active roles in the economy of both continents. So we expect to meet ambassadors of state, industry practitioners, like those who are in manufacturing, those who are in real estate, for instance, coming to talk to us, for us to all learn what to do differently, especially in this season of COVID, so that our businesses can thrive and the two continents' economy will continue to be strengthened.
As a major proponent of this forum, what do you think will be the major takeaways of this event?
The major takeaway for this event will be, after the pandemic, how are we going to do business differently? I mean, we're talking about innovative ways of doing business today, so that we will not let the pandemic become an albatross hanging on our neck. Now, we have all come to accept that COVID has come to stay. So in my opinion, we are going to learn what to do differently to strengthen the businesses and the bilateral ties between these two continents post-COVID.
What should be the expectations of participants who will be part of this event, and how beneficial will this event be to and for them and their businesses?
Yes, I always say that your network is your net worth. I foresee that participants are really going to benefit in this forum. It's an opportunity to come together and network. We expect more than 200 people who are coming physically, and we expect even more than 400 people who are also going to join us virtually. And all these people are coming together to network and to find business opportunities, to find like-minded people that you can synergize and do business. So in my opinion, the key benefit will be the networking that is going to happen that will create business opportunities for participants.
So personally, what are your expectations?
I have fantastic expectations. I expect to see many people at this coming event. I expect to see merchants. I expect to see government institutions. For instance, we have invited the Association of Ghana Industries. I expect to see these people who are coming to share with us the experiences, what's really happening on the ground, and how we can do things differently, what needs to be changed, how to change it, so that these two continents that are so strong, especially Africa. Now, Africa is the next big thing. Everybody is looking at our direction at the moment because we have everything that we need to have as a continent to grow, to be able to rival continents like the Americas, like the Europe's, because we have the human capital, we have the natural resources, and so on and so forth. It is time for us to be able to create liquidity. It's time for us to be able to create capital within ourselves. I always say that Africans have always been exporting wealth and importing money. This has to change. We have jumped from the economy of agriculture to trade, but we must be able to also put emphasis also on industry, on manufacturing, so that our wealth can be kept within. And we think that Asia is a very good ally for us at this stage.
Mark Gideon Darko is the Asian African Chamber of Commerce and Industries country president in Ghana. He spoke with me from the capital, Accra.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sikus, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Impuga, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Juna, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs and Music from our African collection. But first, world health experts are still searching the origins of the Omicron variant of the coronavirus. But in Botswana, where the variant was first reported, officials say what matters is that it was discovered, not where it came from. For viewing, Kodisi Dube reports from the Botswana capital, Habaroni.
Amid questions over the origins of Omicron, a new and highly transmittable variant of the coronavirus that causes COVID-19, Botswana says the focus should be on finding solutions to the pandemic. Botswana and South Africa were the first to report the new variant, which is said to be highly contagious and has spread around the globe. Initially, Omicron was thought to have originated from Botswana, but the Southern African country was quick to dismiss the reports. President Mokgweetsi Masisi, in an interview with CNN Thursday, said the variant was detected in diplomats who visited Botswana but had passed through Europe.
The diplomats came from a number of countries, the countries of origin, the countries of workstation, and they passed through a number of countries to get to Botswana. And yes, some had been to Europe and some had been elsewhere. It would seem the very creation of this new virus is as a result of interventions from a diversity of sources.
But some scientists, including South African-based Richard Lessels, who was part of the team that discovered the new variant, say it is key to tracing the origins of the variant. They argue one key way out of a variant puzzle is to trace genetic origins, which is why it matters to know where Omicron originated. Trevor Bedford, a computational virologist and professor at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center in the U.S. city of Seattle, is also involved in researching Omicron's origins. He told U.S.-based National Public Radio that identifying the source of the virus would help scientists assess the potential threat of the variant through making educated guesses. For instance, he says if Omicron had been evolving out of sight in a large population of humans over a period of months, it suggests that the variant is less transmissible. But Botswana Minister of Health Edwin Dikolodi says tracing the variant's origins will only stigmatize the country where it is traced.
Where the virus originates from is not important. We are not going to be geopoliticizing this virus. What is important is to applaud our scientists who have discovered or found this virus to make the world aware of it so that we can act quicker to reduce the transmission.
Dikolodi says Botswana will not disclose the nationalities of the four diplomats in their countries of origin. President Masisi says Botswana and South Africa are paying the price for the discovery of Omicron after other countries placed travel bans on several African countries following the announcement. Instead, he says the scientists who discovered and reported the variant should be celebrated.
I'd like to applaud our scientific community for their relentless efforts in monitoring the variant and being the first to sequence the Omicron variant of concern and making information available to the international community timelessly, as is their responsibility. The response by some countries to our detection of the Omicron variant is unfortunate, as it appears to have caused unnecessary panic amongst the public across the world.
President Masisi describes the ban on mostly visitors from Southern Africa as divisive.
Even if they didn't originate in Europe, I make no sense of these travel bans. These travel bans, if I were to be more candid, are nothing but a manifestation of neo-imperialist thinking. These travel bans, if I can be very direct, are very paternalizing and very divisive, and they undermine our belief systems in multilateralism. They question our confidence in proclaimed addiction to principles of human rights.
While the new variant is said to be highly infectious, in Botswana, with a population of about 2.4 million people, the infection rate has been rather slow, with only 24 reported cases, all of them with mild symptoms. While Botswana maintains it is not important to report the place of discovery of the Omicron variant, scientists like Bedford and Lessels argue it is critical to find out where it came from in order to help fight it. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Habaroni.
Somalia's annual Mogadishu International Book Fair has resumed following the suspension of the event last year due to the coronavirus pandemic. Restrictions were applied to the invitation-only event this year in order to prevent the spread of COVID-19. For VOA, Mohamed Kahir reports from the Somali capital, Mogadishu.
The sixth edition of the Mogadishu Book Fair was a big distraction for the residents of the capital, Mogadishu, away from the political tension linked to disagreements over the ongoing parliamentary elections in the country. This year's book fair was limited to a few people, especially authors, due to the coronavirus pandemic. But according to the founder of the fair, Mohamed Dini, organizers are already working to accommodate more people next year.
So in essence, we really are doing about 10% of what we did. And ultimately, we just wanted to do something, even if it's little, so that next year we can go back to our previous state, inshallah.
Selected students from Mogadishu schools were invited this year to the Children's Corner, where they enjoyed reading, storytelling and cultural tales. Hanan Abditalil from the Mogadishu International School is one of them. She said she's very happy and excited to take part in the Mogadishu Book Fair this year, adding that she enjoyed storytelling from Igal Shidat and Wilwal fictional tales, among others. She also said she was looking forward to attending next year. Prime Minister Mohamed Hussein Roble, who is busy resolving an electoral-related stalemate, congratulated the organizers of the book fair. In a tweet, the Prime Minister stressed the need to encourage the pen and the book to replace arms and tribalism. Mohamed Kahiye for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Impuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. FIFA has dismissed appeals from South Africa and Benin over World Cup qualifying incidents. FIFA ruled an appeal for South Africa relating to a decisive 2022 World Cup qualifying match against Ghana is inadmissible. Bafana Bafana had claimed they were robbed after their 1-0 defeat last month, with the only goal in the game scored from a first-half penalty. The South African Football Association had alleged match-fixing and match manipulation, including corruption and bribery. South Africa had needed a draw to reach Africa's World Cup playoffs, but the result meant Ghana progressed at their expense on goals scored. Meanwhile, an appeal by Benin about substitutions made by DR Congo in another crucial qualifier on the same day has also been dismissed. FIFA's disciplinary committee said both protests were inadmissible as they did not meet relevant requirements, but also said the decisions are subject to appeal. It means for now Ghana and DR Congo will be in January's draw for the African World Cup playoffs to decide the continent's five representatives in Qatar, set to be played in March. In another development, Nick Mwendwa has stepped aside as president of Football Kenya Federation after being charged with multiple counts of fraud. In a letter to the Football Kenya Federation's National Executive Committee members, Mwendwa handed over to Vice President Doris Petra, saying he felt personally targeted by his arrest and the subsequent charges, but denied any wrongdoing. Mwendwa, who pleaded not guilty to four counts of fraud last week, but now is out on bail, has been head of the Football Kenya Federation since 2016. In cricket, Namibia, South Africa and Zimbabwe will co-host the 2027 Cricket World Cup. Namibia has recently had a good performance, especially at the T20 World Cup, where they reached the Super 12s stage for the first time. But cricket in Namibia is still seen as a white man's sport, and many feel co-hosting the event in 2027 might change people's perceptions for the sport in Namibia. In athletics, the disgraced former head of World Athletics governing body, Lamina Diack, died at home in Senegal. He was 88 years old. Diack, who was convicted of corruption last year, was president of World Athletics, formerly the International Association of Athletics Federation, or IAAF, from 1999 to 2015. In September last year, he was found guilty of corruption and money laundering linked to the Russian doping scandal. Despite his conviction, he still enjoyed a lot of support in Senegal. Finally, the FIFA Arab Cup kicked off last week with Morocco beating Palestine 4-0. The 16-nation FIFA Arab Cup is currently taking place in Qatar and will end on December 18th. Morocco won the last Arab Cup in 2012, but this edition in Qatar is the first under FIFA's jurisdiction. Algeria, Egypt, Mauritania, Morocco, Sudan, and Tunisia are the teams from Africa. And that's about it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Perhaps owing to the two-day China-Africa ministerial at Dakar, Senegal, there were many conflicting comments and debates about the status of Chinese-African relationship. Many of the comments, of course, were reiterating something which had been said in the past. For example, those who are critical of China's involvement in Africa again reminded Africans that the policy of China in Africa marks of neocolonialism. Mention that China's interest is merely for resource, mainly mining and others. The other troubling criticism comes mostly from the West, and it is a warning to African countries to be aware of what they call debt trap. By that they mean that China does not observe the stringent conditionality that are applied by the Bretton Woods institutions and the Washington Consensus, and that they are assuming debts which they could not pay. In this connection, they draw lessons from Sri Lanka, which has enough debt from China for its infrastructure project, and when it could not pay, it had to lease its ports for 99 years. Recently, they are pointing to Laos, which have just completed a major infrastructural project of cross-border railway. And again, they say this will mean that Laos would have to turn over the running of the railroad to China at some stage. This particular argument has been applied to Kenya, which had benefited from major infrastructural projects from China, for example, the modern railway from Mombasa to Nairobi, and they just completed byway roads in Nairobi. But there are others who take a different point of view. Those attending this ministerial meeting were saying that China has been very beneficial to the African continent, that it has promoted trade, even though China sells more to Africa than buys, but that China is trying to improve the situation, that China has been able to to have the question of infrastructure emphasized, given the fact that many Africans had poor infrastructure. And in the address that Xi Jinping made to this ministerial meeting, he also emphasized that China has goodwill towards Africa, that it will continue its assistance, and that it will also continue its infrastructure program, although it said it will stop coal producing equipment to Africa. The question that Africans have to bear in mind is this. These kinds of criticism back and forth is typical of what happened during the Cold War. Africans, after they achieved their independence, were approached by both the East and the West, and each one was touting its main possibilities. But at the end of the Cold War, the Russians withdraw, and the Western countries also withdraw, turning their attention to the East European countries that have emerged from the socialist camp, as it was called. So Africans must continue to do what they have said they would do. For example, the Secretary of State of the United States told Africans in his trip to Africa that they do not want Africans to choose between America and China, but for them to compare their systems. And in this connection, the United States said it will be ramping up its trade relations with Africa and also producing other infrastructure projects. The European Union announced last week that it will undertake major infrastructure projects in Africa. So this is the kind of give and take that Africa will enjoy. Turkey and India are also helping. The only thing one should bear in mind in Africa is that while it have these relationships with outside countries, it should be aware of not being too dependent on outside forces. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs.
Baby, you boss in my brain. Ooh. Baby, you take over me. Ooh. You make me dancing, calypso's for you, my lord.
It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Baby, you know I love you like seriously. So baby, don't stop loving me. Oh, na 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 na.
This is a song for all the girls. All the girls in the building.
Na 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 na. Arabadi di di bam 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 bam. All the girls wanna cook.
Baby, show me, tell me what you think about this. I keep singing, telling people what you mean to me. If it wasn't for you, don't know what my life would have been. Darling, you're so true, and there's nothing I won't do. So I go day day for you, spend them for you, and keep them for you. I go clean them for you, design them for you, till I make them for you. So I go day day for you, spend them for you, and keep them for you. I go clean them for you, design them for you, till I make them for you.
Baby, you're passing my brain. Baby, you take over me. You make me dancing, calypso's for you. My love, I will do anything. Mama, I know go make you fall so far. Baby, you know I love you like seriously. Baby, don't stop.
Yes.
One, baby, I want you to strip down, shake up your bum bum. Two, if I spend my money, will you dance for me? Three, scatter the place like a upline piranha. Four, if
I give you something, will you be there? Oh, ciao, Panama. One, two, do your Panama. Every day I dey keep on doing my Panama, baby. Love you, you love me, Panama. Ah, Jackie, oh, Panama. Oh, I love you, sweetie, Panama. Dancey, dancey for me, oh, Panama. I love you, baby, oh, my sweetie, Panama. Baby, you pass in my brain, oh. Baby, you take up on me, oh. You make me dance in calypso for you, my love. I will do anything. Baby, you know me, mama. I no go make you fall so far. Baby, you know I love you like seriously. So baby, don't stop loving me.
Not tell another woman of them too sexy. Every day you are gonna drive me crazy. Me not gonna left your body, no, no. Every night I'm on a battlefield more. Are you alone? No one fi do it. Tenderness to make me body complete. Move it down from the bed, come down to the floor. In the bathroom, like a back up on the wall. They love me and for you, man, I never ending. Me want you know, say, it's a perfect blending. Come make me love you up till early morning. I love you so bad, you can take all me money. Good boy, now I have no room for regrets. Now I have no shoes in my closet. How to share love, as all the things set. You wicked and bad, so glad we connect.
Baby, you're passing my brain, oh. Baby, you take over me, oh. You make me dance in calypso for you, my love. I will do anything. Baby, you know me, mama. I no go make you fall so far. Baby, you know I love you like seriously. So baby, don't stop loving me. Baby, you're passing my brain, oh. Baby, you take over me, oh. You make me dance in calypso for you, my love. I will do anything. Baby, you know me, mama. I no go make you fall so far. Baby, you know I love you like seriously. So baby, don't stop loving me.
Yeah, JR alongside Nega Don. Anything.
I got to let you know, the things you did to me, I cannot let you go. How many times I got to let you know, the way you do, what you do me, girl, I cannot let you go. Honey, oh, girl, you are killing me, oh. I need to let you know the things you do, I cannot let you go. Hey, baby, how many times I got to let you know the way you do, where you do me, girl, my love does it overflow. My life on my body, and so,
A song that comes from Tanzania. Malaika, nakupenda malaika. Malaika, roho yangu
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of The Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, Managing Editor William Eagle, Reporter Douglas Impuga, and Producer Nicole Beckford, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, only the thing for which you have struggled will last. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.